Welcome back. We're in the home stretch. We got the mad dogs left. So it's wasn't willing to spend all day with this. So there's some promises in the ninth step. It says if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves. So I used to read this on the wall, wondering if I had these promises. What I ended up doing one day was sitting down and looking at the bedevilments on page 52, and I realized that the bedevilments on page 52 are actually the opposite of the promises on page 83. So this is something that you can find on the Jay Walker website, thejaywalker.com, and it prints it off. Plug.
Too late.
But the Devilman's page 52 says, we are having trouble with personal relationships. On page 83 it says, that one of the promises say, we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. On page 52 it says, we couldn't control our emotional natures. On page 83 it says, we will comprehend the word serenity and know peace. On page 52 it says, we were prey to misery and depression. Page 83 it says, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. The bedevilments on 52 says, we couldn't make a living. The promises on 83 says, fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. Page 52 says, we had a feeling of uselessness. Page 83 says, the feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. On page 52, the devilments, it says, we were full of fear. In the promises on page 83, it says, we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. On page 52, it says, we were unhappy. On page 83, it says, we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. On page 52, it says we couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. And on page 83, in the promises, it says, no matter how far down the scale we've gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. And most of all, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. So seeing that page 52 is the opposite of the promises, if I can relate to the things on page 52, it probably means that I don't have the promises in my life. Right, so that's a great test for it. So it goes on to say, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. And most important, it says, they will always materialize. The promises will always materialize if we work for them, right? If you don't work for them, then you won't have them, right? You'll lose it. This is not something that you get once and keep forever, right? And we're going to talk about that. How do we work towards keeping the promises in our life? And that thought brings us to step 10.
So, step 10, continue to take personal inventory and when wrong, promptly admitted it. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we take personal inventory and continue to set, I'm sorry, it says we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up the past. So they're talking about we're starting to commence this way of living as we clean up the past. So they're talking about as I'm doing the ninth step, I want to stay current. I want to stay current. I want to continue to take personal inventory and set right any wrongs or mistakes, actually mistakes that I may occur as I'm making amends. So I could be making amends and causing harm all over the place and not recognizing it, and it's like a dog chasing its tail. I'm just getting nowhere. So this is where it starts where I start to be accountable. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next step and function is to grow in effectiveness and understanding. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime.
When it talks about that we've entered the world of the spirit, one of the things we used to talk about in our home group is spirit world living. Right? What is it to have entered the world of the spirit? I think it's going to talk about it more on the next page, where it talks about or actually a little bit further up, yeah, the next page, when it talks about the vital sixth sense. We'll get to that in a minute. But to be at a place where I've entered the world of the spirit, I believe that what they're referring to is the ability to go inside and to bring that which we've got out into the world around us.
So that's our awakened spirit. We're starting to wake up. We're getting on the other side of these amends. The God consciousness is flowing through us, and it's telling us that we have to do this for a lifetime.
Also, where it says our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. You hear some people refer to 10 and 11 as maintenance steps.
Oh.
Right? And I don't believe that this is saying that we're supposed to only maintain this. It says that my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Certainly I need to maintain what I've got to this point, but
need to grow.
I have to understand that only I can put the ceiling on my spiritual growth, and saying that this is all there is for me, that this is all there is in the program for me, right? That this is all the only amount of God I can get in my life, right? And I put those limitations on this. Experience has shown us that we can continue to grow in this program and spiritually and towards God.
And be effective with the people about us. So a lot of people think the 10th step is about writing inventory. And that isn't really what it's about. There's really clear-cut instructions that tell me that that's not it. We continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
Not right. To watch.
Right. Not right. To watch. And it's going to tell me what happens. When these crop up, not if they crop up, when they crop up, we ask God to remove them at once. Remove them at once. So we turn to God first. Everything is about turning to God first now. I look at human power has failed me. I'm beyond human aid. All these things, all the way up through the book, has told me that self is the problem, that human power isn't enough to keep me sober. I need divine intervention. I need a God in my life. So why would I start depending on people here? People start to depend on people in the 10th step because it says we discuss it with somebody at once. It might be the person that I I harmed in this moment. I might want to discuss it with them. I don't sit and start to look for my cell phone to call my sponsor.
It does say at once.
At once.
Someone at
right?
once.
So I'm working on the aircraft. I'm working at McDonnell Douglas. We work in the airplane. There's drills coming in and out of the skin and out of the floor, and everybody has to corrugate where they are. So this guy drills a hole from the bottom. It goes through my shoe, catches my sock, and goes between my toes. I go down there and I push him and I say, "What the hell's wrong with you?" Right? So I'm in this process. So what happened was is that I saw that I was selfish, dishonest, and I was in fear of losing my feet. Right? So I asked God to remove this at once. I stepped away from the situation and I asked God to remove this. And I discussed it with him. "I'm sorry that I came and I came off on you. Let's try to corrugate our work together more be more communicative of how we're working and where we're at in the aircraft." So it was a very healthy moment. It could have in the past I would have just decked him, knocked him out, and we would have hit him with a drill motor or some shit, you know. So
when it says we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone, the idea here is to stay current in the moment. In the moment. And that it becomes a practice of a way of life, right? Obviously it's not something that I can do perfectly. Sometimes I slip up. Sometimes that someone is not the same person that I need to actually make amends to. Sometimes there's more than one people in the room, and sometimes what it looks like is I've had an interaction with someone and they walk out of the room, and I turn to someone I trust to say, did I cause harm there? Right? Because maybe sometimes I'm not clear, so I depend on someone that's maybe there. I'm not saying I stop, call my sponsor, and ask for advice. We spent all this time developing the idea that we can trust and rely on a God in our life, and not a person. Right? So I have to be able to do this immediately.
Immediately, and so many people skew this. Even in our own home group, people are constantly talking about how they're calling their 10th step buddy and talking with them, not immediately, when they can get in touch with that person. So immediately, and the book is very clear about that. And so I'm not dependent on people anymore. I'm dependent on God at once. And then when I come from that place, when I ask God to remove this, then I'm going to know who to talk to, because God is going to guide me to who I need to talk to immediately. And we make amends quickly. We have found if we have harmed anyone, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. We don't help anybody here. I don't go out and help the grandmother across the street carry her groceries. I turn my thoughts to someone I can help. That might be a sponsee that I know is having some trouble. I might say a prayer for that person. But I'm turning my thoughts. And what does it mean to turn? We're turning out of this and into God. I'm turning away from this and I'm turning into God. So this is where I start to turn my thoughts.
And naturally, situations are going to vary, right? And I have to be open in a prayerful way to be mindful of the situation. Sometimes if I harm someone, turning my thoughts to someone I can help may be the person I've just harmed, right? Because love and tolerance of others is my code now, right? And to find love and tolerance of others, right? The idea here is hopefully to get through the day doing the right thing as often as I can, but I'm not going to do it perfectly. All right? So my practice that I'm practicing is watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, right? And hopefully I'll catch it before I open my mouth, right? Turn to God at once, hopefully that will prevent problems, but then I can't do it perfectly, so...
And thank God. Thank God I can't do it perfectly.
So, the other thing that I'd like to say about, if you have somebody that you call up on a regular basis, some people like the idea of having what they call a 10-step buddy. I don't know that there's anything wrong with talking to someone that you trust, but I think you could almost argue that it probably would be better calling him an 11-step buddy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Just because sometimes we have to turn to people we trust to get clear on our behavior and what's going on around us.
Yeah, I didn't want to discount that idea, but this is something that has to happen quickly. And the 11th step is something that happens later.
Yeah. But I have people that I trust that I talk to. Like, for example, Sheldon. And I talk to him when things come up. But I don't call him a 10-step buddy or 11-step buddy. I just call him a friend that I trust and that I bounce things off of.
Right.
So, Susan, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. It's a big deal. Right? Sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. And if tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. Remember earlier on it described insanity as like touching a hot flame
a
hot stove over and over. You know? So here it's talking about being in a place where God has restored us to sanity. React sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically.
What does that mean?
It means it just happened, right? I haven't been working on staying sober. I haven't been working on my drinking. I've just been looking at all this other stuff, right? We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. Right, the majority of the thought and effort has been, as I said, all this other stuff. It just comes, and that's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. Neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Okay, my alcoholism hasn't been removed, but the problem with alcohol has been removed.
Right.
It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor we are afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Right? And the reason that that's important is because seeing that the problem has been removed, but the alcoholism has not been removed. Right? So long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. Right? It goes back to what we've talked about all the way through. Is unfit spiritual condition would be spiritual separation. From spiritual separation comes the potential for the obsession to return, and I drink again.
So these are really great promises, but now it's going to promise us another thing if we if we slack up. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. That's a promise. It's easy to do that. So we got to watch and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble.
A laurel is like the wreath they put around the horse after it's won a race, right? It's easy to get to this place here and even finish amends and think, well,
I got my wreath.
I finished amends. You raise your hand.
I won the race. So it's easy to do that, and when you're in fit spiritual condition, the world looks pretty awesome. I kind of equate it to, let's say, somebody that has they're bipolar, my wife is bipolar. That's why I'm using this example. I'm not using it just out of the side of my neck. When she was feeling really up, she didn't take her medication. She didn't think she needed it, and she rested on her laurels to the fact that, you know what, I feel great, I don't need my medication, and she would have an episode or whatever. So I always equated that to my own spirit, resting on my own laurels with this spiritual process, that I feel really great now, why do I need to really turn to God anymore? You know, I got this now, you know, and it's easy to do that, it's telling me.
It says, we're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. Right? Just because I don't feel like I'm not alcoholic anymore, I shouldn't confuse the freedom of problem, right, with being not alcoholic. Because right? It says here, it says, we're not cured of alcoholism. Interesting, one of the things that you read in the beginning was that it says what we recover from. It says we recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And here, in this section, it says we're not cured of alcoholism. So I know that brings up a little bit of debate, but here's how I describe it. Is I look at alcoholism from three perspectives. Physically, my physical alcoholism is I lose control of how much I drink once I start. My mental alcoholism is that even if I haven't drank for a while, I'm susceptible for obsessions that will take me back to the physical part of the problem. But here it says that we're not cured of alcoholism. And what they're talking about here is what we're not cured of is the spiritual side of our alcoholic problem, right? Because for an alcoholic, the spiritual separation is what sets up the condition conducive for the obsessions to return, and I drink again, right? And this part, the spiritual side of this that I'm never cured of, the spiritual side gets suppressed, right? As long as I maintain and grow my spiritual condition, as long as I'm willing to continue to work to maintain my spiritual condition.
And this is how I react.
So long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. If I don't keep in fit spiritual condition, right, then I may find that I'm no longer cured of alcoholism.
And the funny part is that, you know what?
I said that wrong, by the way. I will see how I'm not cured of alcoholism if I don't keep in fit spiritual condition.
Right.
That's how I meant to say it.
And the funny thing about being in fit spiritual condition, you start to wake up to the fact that I'm not in a fit spiritual condition. So I start noticing, because of the 10th step, I see this slipping away, I see that I'm resting on my laurels, and that I go into the solution right away. That's been my experience with this, and that's been the most powerful thing. It's got to be bigger than alcohol. It's got to be bigger than my resentment. It's got to be bigger than my fear.
What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts that must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along these lines. All we wish. It's the proper use of the will.
Can you elaborate on that? That where it talks about that? We can exercise our willpower along this line, all we wish.
Yes.
I want to hear what they're saying.
Sure. So, I don't think that my problem was so much that I had a strong will. But when it's self-driven, is when I had the bigger problem with it. Right? What I believe is when I align my will with God's will, I see something different in my life. So exercising my will power along these lines, all I wish, that's the proper use of the will, is when I'm aligning my will with God's will. One of the things that you hear in some meetings is they talk about that we have damaged minds, right? And I don't think that that's really so much the issue. Is that when I'm in a selfish, self-centered, self-driven place, right? It comes out a certain way. When I'm willing to turn to God, like it's saying here, watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, when those crop up, not if they crop up, but when they crop up, being willing to turn to God in all of my activities, right? That's aligning my will with God's will. And that's the proper use of the will.
Right. And you know, a lot of meetings, they start to cringe when you say that I get to exercise my willpower along these lines, all I wish. And it's just cringing, because what happens in that moment when I align my will with God's will and I can exercise my willpower along these lines, the funny thing happens, I have to be responsible for my actions. All of a sudden, it's not, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and you know, that's how we are. And I use alcoholism as an excuse for my bad behavior. But what happens here is that there's no excuse for my bad behavior. I screwed you over because I'm an ass. Right? It's not because of alcoholism. I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of it. I have to take responsibility for my actions now. I have to take responsibility for my spiritual condition and for my actions on how I treat others. And our friend Jaime used to say, every day, every day. He would say that in the meeting over and over. Nobody knew what he was talking about, but he'd go, every day. It was like, finish it, Jaime, finish it. Every day is the day we have to bring God into all of our activities, not just some of them, not just alcoholism, not just the meeting, but all of our activities.
So much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we begin to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. Right? So, it talks about a vital sixth sense. And I think that that's important. And this is going to be attached really to my own ideas of God. Not everybody necessarily has to agree with this, but it talks about God as a vital sixth sense. We have five physical senses, right? It's sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch, right? In the past, I've always relied on my physical senses to reason what's happening in my life, right? I even tried to put my physical senses, I've even tried to use my physical senses to sense God in my life, right? If I'm elated, I feel full of God, right? If I'm depressed and things and sad, right, then I'm separated from God, right? And see, the problem with making God, sensing God through the physical senses, is there is no God when I need God the most. What they're talking about here is God being a vital sixth sense. And it's that sixth sense that I've never relied on in the past. It's the sixth sense that's not one of my physical senses. Right? So God is not a feeling. When I'm elated and full of God, it may be the result of being in a godly place, right? But it's how I react to that place. It's my physical senses and how I've responded to that, right? But what I have to see is that if God is really this vital sixth sense, that even when I'm not feeling full of God, right, I have a reliance and a faith, trust that God is still there. because it's not based in a feeling, it's based in a knowing. And it's rooted in this practice that shows me how to constantly see that in my life, how to use it. You know, because the 10th step is all about how to bring God into all of my activities, you know, and watching for opportunities in my life to do that. Right? And that has to work even when I don't feel full of God. Right? I know that God is still there.
And in the 9th step promises, it says, I'll intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. And I think that's really attached to this vital sixth sense, that it's my intuition.
So this becomes my practice. Right? It's a practice that I've never had. Moving through life, looking for opportunities to bring God into my life. Right? Hopefully before I've opened my mouth. If that doesn't happen, hopefully I do something immediately to try to change that. Right? So it becomes like a mindfulness practice. This is my practice, and I'm going to practice my practice. Right? And that practice is to practice bringing God into all of my activities. So I think it's important to also be conscious of how I'm doing with this. And I believe that's what the 11th step is about. So it goes on to say, at the bottom of 85, it says, step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. Now prayer, if you look in the dictionary, you'll probably see pages and pages and pages of definitions for prayer. So you have to look at the context it's being used in order to find the right definition. Meditation is another word like that that's kind of, in time, has kind of taken on meaning. It seems like when the subject of the 11th step comes up, you know, people want to talk about all kinds of things like silent meditation or their Zen practice. Now, I'm not saying those things are bad. I'm just saying, again, you have to look at the context it's used in to know what they're talking about here in the 11th step. So the context that this is used in, prayer is asking God, and meditation is to directed thought. So step 11 suggests asking God to direct my thinking. Right? It says we shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. I used to think that shy meant timid. Right? But that's kind of out of context here. It sort of fits. But shy also means like 11 is one shy of a dozen. Right? So I believe what it says here is we shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than me are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter of prayer. So what would vague prayer look like? You know, vague prayer for me was, now don't get me wrong, I think all prayer is good. I should do it often, you know, so I'm not telling anybody to stop what they're doing, but to me vague prayer was just get up in the morning and roll on your knees and ask God to keep you sober another day. Right? I mean, to me that's kind of vague because and the same thing with nightly prayer. You know, when you go to sleep, just pray and ask and thank God for another day sober. You know, what it's going to talk about here is going to be different than that. Because there's this whole span of time in between that morning prayer and the nighttime prayer. Those prayers are obviously good, but it isn't what the 10th step is referring to, because the 10th step is referring to bringing God into all of my activities. Right? I'd like to say sleeping might be one of those activities, but I personally have found it's hard to bring God into my sleeping. Right? Once I've fallen asleep. Right? If I can't fall asleep, it's another issue. But the point is here is um, this is about developing a relationship with God. And it's like other relationships. If I were to get up in the morning, right, and kiss my wife, I don't have a wife, but if I did, kiss my wife good morning, right, leave for the day, go about my day, ignore her all day, come home, kiss her good night, and say thanks for being my wife, and go to sleep, right? At some point or another, it's going to be obviously that there's not much of a relationship going on here, right? So what they're going to talk to us now about is, it says, we believe that we can make some definite and valuable suggestions, right? So they're going to make some definite and valuable suggestions about prayer that is going to help maintain and grow this relationship with God. So it says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? So here's another place that refers to an inventory. So what's the difference between here in the 11th step where it says, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid?
The 10th step.
And the 10th step where it says we watch for selfish dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
Well, the answer to that then is that the 10th step is about being current in the moment. And the 11th step is about looking at how well I was current through the day. Right?
It's basically, how well did I tense that?
How well would I tense that?
If I'm writing inventory after the fact, I think there's a good argument here to say that it's 11th step inventory. Right? Again, inventory is a fantastic spiritual tool. So whatever you call it, it's good to do it. But I don't believe that writing inventory during the day in front of somebody I've just interacted with is what's going to happen. Right? If I'm writing inventory, it's after the fact. Right? So I think that's a good argument for calling this an 11th step inventory. So where was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do I owe an apology? Have I kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? That could be another argument for 11th step buddy. Right. Again, I wouldn't call it that because I don't know why, but I just don't like the term, I guess. Were we kind and loving towards all? Basically, you can look at all of these questions. And what I had done in the beginning is I listed all these questions and sat with them every night, asking myself these questions. And what I found was it's good to learn what the page is saying, but it was hard to maintain because it was repetitive, and it became something that I couldn't continue to do over a long period of time. So really what it's asking here is, with all these considerations, is how did I behave, right? And I find that sitting quietly, constructively reviewing my day, I just look at my day as, you know, I scan my day and I consider, you know, what behavior here did I find objectionable or positive. Right, because that would be constructively reviewing my day. Maybe constructively reviewing my day means something was objectionable and I turned to God at once and it was not objectionable anymore and I get to see God working in my life. Most of the times when I'm scanning my day and things come up, though, it's gonna be because something happened during the day that I'm uncomfortable with. So there's the part in the book here where it talks about after making a review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures to be taken. And I thought that was interesting. I'm looking for my bad behavior, then I'm asking God's forgiveness. And in contemplation of that, what I realized is that I made a commitment to this way of life, that I'm going to turn to God in all of my activities, and then something comes up that I find objectionable about my behavior. What I've realized is I failed to turn to God for help with that. Right?
So, the book talks about this becomes a working part of my mind. And that's what Dan's talking about. This becomes a working part of my mind. I don't have to hash this out. I can actually go through this in my mind now. My thinking is placed on a much higher plane at this point. So I can use my mind to sort this all out, aligned with God. There's a question in here that kind of always threw me back. I do all of this stuff, and it says, what could I have done better? And, you know, and then that question that Dan talked about after making our review, we asked God's forgiveness. Well, what I could have done better is probably turned more into God throughout the day. And I asked God to forgive me for not doing that and move into that, you know, and realize that I made a commitment to this power. Starting from the third step decision all the way up to this point, I have made a commitment to live by this. So when I fall short of that, it's not, and it's important to look at it constructively. I'm looking at this constructively. I'm not here to beat myself up over the things that I didn't do right throughout the day. Some of these things slipped through my 10th step. I never even noticed them through the day at all. And they kind of just wiggled their way through, and this is like the catch-all. This is the moment where I get to take a look at some of those things even. What's great about all of this is that we come into upon awakening, and now I have something to bring into my day, my next day.
Because in the evening, if I've asked God's forgiveness and inquired what corrective measures should be taken, right, I bring those corrective measures into upon awakening.
Again, real quick, I know earlier in the day in the workshop you made reference to you devilness for the first three steps, and also you said you the 11th step.
Yeah, you're asking that I made the reference to using the bedevilness in the 11th step. One of the things that can be useful is to turn the bedevilments on page 52 into a consideration. Again, is where am I ignoring God? You know, did I bring God into all my relationships today? Right? If there was misery or depression, did I ignore God in those times? Was there, in my emotional nature, was there problems with my emotional nature where I failed to turn to God? Right. So what I see is the bedevilments is a result of spiritual separation. Right. So I can use that as a prayer to identify spiritual separation. You know, it's about seeing. Identifying areas that I failed to turn to God in, right, that I know that I could do much better when I do, and when I use. Did you want to talk about the on awakening or should I?
Yeah, I'll talk about that. Upon awakening, we think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity. Sorry, I lost my place. Self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. For after all, God gave us a brain to use. So, what I'm doing here is that. I'm setting myself up for a tenth step to be focused with what I'm going to do with my tenth step throughout the day. So I'm going to ask God to divorce me from these things, and then that's going to give me the power to watch for these things to crop up throughout the day in my tenth step. And it's telling me under these conditions I can employ my mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave me a brain to use, and that's what I was talking about before. I'm able to use my mind now to sort some things out because it's aligned with God's will.
So it also uses the term, it says we ask God to direct our thinking. That's prayer and meditation. Asking God is prayer, and directing our thinking, directed thought is meditation. Right? It's only silent meditation if it says silent meditation.
Right.
What they're talking about here is a contemplative meditation. And the way that looks here is, I thought when I consider my plans for the day, that I would list what I'm going to do. I'm going to get up at this time, I'm going to take a shower, eat breakfast, go to work. Well, I quickly realized that was kind of repetitive and unproductive, because it was pretty much the same every day. What I realized is what they're telling me to do here is to do something with what came out of
the nightly review.
Yeah. That I'm going to look at what corrective measures come at night, bring that into my plans for the day. Okay, I see that my behavior with that person at the meeting was objectionable, right? So today, when I see that person at that meeting, you know, I'm going to pray into it and bring God into all of my activities, but being especially mindful of this situation, which I saw that I didn't like my behavior previously, right? There's a term in the book where it talks about claiming spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. I see because I fall short, I don't bring God into all of my activities, right? But for me to claim spiritual progress, this is what that means to me, is I'm mindful of where I fall short, and I try to be diligent and bring God into the areas where I have failed to bring God into me previously. And I start to see spiritual growth in my life, because I see yesterday, this is how I reacted to that situation, and this is how it came out, and this is how it looked today when I brought God into this, right? So I get to identify specific situations where I ignore God and see how much better it works when I don't ignore God. And with that, I have proof of spiritual growth.
So there's really scary things here. The proper use of the will. God gave me a brain to use, so I'm going to use it. You know, it destroys that whole idea that my brain is a bad neighborhood to visit. You hear that a lot in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's a sad thing, because my mind is a great place to visit now. I want to be there because I have the proper attitude. What is that attitude? Trusting and relying upon God, and that He gave me a brain to use, and now I'm going to learn how to use it properly, and that I get to exercise my will properly. It says that our thinking brain, our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So I'm asking God to divorce me from selfish and self-seeking motives. So now I'm asking God to help me to set up this kind of way of thinking as I go throughout my day, bringing in what I did wrong from the night before, bringing that into my plan for the day, seeing that my thinking is placed on a much higher plane, that I can actually use my mind. And then it tells me that if I face any indecisions throughout the day, and I'm not able to determine which course to take, here I ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought. We were talking about intuition, and that I'll intuitively know how to handle situations. Everything is connected. Everything is connected to everything else. It's not a linear process. It's a circular process. Everything's connected. And I've got for inspiration an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We often be surprised how the right answer comes after we have tried this for a while. Into action is telling me to relax and take it easy. The hardest action for drunks to take. It's not telling me to be active. It's telling me to relax and take it easy and not to struggle.
Push. Let's skip forward so we have time to get 12 in before we end. So I'd like to touch on the bottom of 87, where it says two things. I want to make a point where it says, if we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also, not instead. Right? You hear a lot of, again, when you hear people talk about the 11th step in a meeting, you'll hear about all sorts of personal spiritual
levitating
paths. Silent meditation, Zen practice, religion. You hear all kinds of things. There's nothing wrong with any of that, right? Right. But what the 11th step talks about is what we've just read. You know, identifying where we fall short. In the 10th step, I like, not everybody likes this term, but I like to refer to it as where I failed the 10th step, right? And take corrective measures, and consider that in the morning, upon awakening. So, again, all that's, this other stuff is good, like silent meditation and all that, right? But that isn't necessarily the 11th step.
And we don't do prayer and meditation in other aspects. We bring it into this. We do that
also,
along with, not instead of.
Attend to that also.
Right,
instead.
Also. We attend to this also.
So the next part here says, as we go through the day, this is the bottom of 87. And this is connected with how I look at the third step. Remember, because in the third step, I talked about the questions, right? About the director and the actor, and the father and the child, and the principal and agent. Right? How good a job have I done directing my life on my own power? How good a job have I been being the principal, making you be who I would have you be, and the father and child relationship? How good a job have I done providing what I need on my own power? Look what it says here in this paragraph. This is actually me living the third step decision. As I go through the day, I pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action, because I trust that if I turn to God, that He will provide what I need. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. God's the director, I'm just the actor. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, Thy will be done. Right? I will be who God would have me be. That's the principal and agent relationship. And it says we are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, and worry. Excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. Right, it calls those things danger for us, and the reason those are dangerous for us is because excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and foolish decisions are spiritually separating. Right, so this is all about identifying spiritual separation, right, and quickly turning to God for help with those things. So let's try to get 15 minutes worth of time. So then at the last sentence on page 88, it says the next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12, which is working with others.
So now I look at that, I've done all of this work. I've done all of this work. Look at me. I'm saved and I'm cured and I have this great practice, and all of a sudden I realized that I did all of this not for me. I did all of this so I can take my awakened spirit into the world and be of service to the people about me. So therefore I start to work with others to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers, this message. What is this message? What we have done up to this point. That's this message. If you're having trouble carrying this message, you probably haven't had an experience with this message. Because it says, as a result of these steps, this is the result. I looked for results in booze, now I need results in this 12-step process. And it better be as good as booze. And it has been. It has been. I've awakened. I'm living a lot better. I'm not struggling. I'm not as in much fear. And when I am in fear, I recognize it. But why am I doing that? So that I can be of use to the people about me. And, it says somewhere, I think it was in the preface, I forget where it says it, it says that we want to start carrying this message, I'm trying to think what it says. So the reason I'm working with others is not to be helpful to me. It's about being helpful to them. Therefore, I'm basically in a selfless state. I'm in a selfless state depending upon God and relying upon God throughout my day so that I can be useful to people. Now, I work with people, and I can only give them what I got. Obviously, you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. What that means is that now I'm standing on new footing to where I'm more concerned about you than how I'm concerned about what you are thinking about me. And it's a shift in thinking.
So when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had lost everything important. I had very little self-value. Right? I trashed everything that was important in my life. Trashed the marriage. Trashed the business. You know, trashed everything. So my vision of who I was as a person had been very diminished. What I found, I was having had an experience with the first 11 steps and woken up to some things. There was a lot of things that I had learned about myself, and I was encouraged to work with others in a similar fashion. And the result has been I don't know if moving is a big enough word for it. I mean, there's nothing like sitting with someone who's if you talk to them, like, and you knew the things that they want the most out of life at this point is to get a car and get out of this sober living with five other people in the bedroom, right? If they haven't talked to their family, they've been discommunicated from their family for who knows how long. And these problems that have seen, that on top of the alcoholism that was so great in their lives, you know, you go through the process and you sit back and you see that you basically just showed them what I do, right? Encourage them to do the same, and a year later you look back and they've made amends to their family. Right? They've got maybe they've got a little apartment, but they're certainly not in the sober living anymore. They might even have a car at that point. And you see that here is a person who's putting their life back together, staying sober, with the help of this process of God in their life. And I know without a doubt that I didn't strike them sober and I didn't fix their life. I didn't have the power to do that. So again I have the opportunity to watch God work in other people's life in a manner that I would miss looking at my own life. because I don't always see the gifts that God gives me. Right? I'm not always mindful of that. I know they're there, but you know, it just sometimes it's just so much easier to see all of the stuff happening in these other people that you're working with. Right? I suffer from what I like to refer to as chronic agnosticism. Right? Just, I seem to default into doubt. Right? Luckily, my definition of faith helps me with that, because I believe faith is belief with doubt. Right? So it doesn't matter how much I see in my life, I seem to default back into that chronic agnosticism. Though. But when I look at my life and the people around me, and I see how God works with these people, and how the way of life changes them, I cannot deny the power of God in their life. When I do 10 and 11 the way we talked about, when I'm mindful of where I failed the 10th step, bring that into the next day, asking for corrective measures and bringing God into those same situations, I see God working in my life over and over again. So it's like this whole 10, 11, and 12 thing has lined up into this place where I get to constantly see God work in my life and others. Right? And I cannot deny the power of God. Right?
So I figured out I figured out where what I wanted to say, and it was right here. It was right here. All of a sudden, my eye came across it. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others have failed. Remember, they are very ill, just like myself. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others. And that's really important. When I watch them, not only watch them recover, but to watch them work with somebody else. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but I worked with somebody who worked with somebody who worked with somebody who worked with somebody else. And they brought that to my attention. I didn't even know these people had worked with each other. And this guy comes up to me and he says, you know, you work with so-and-so, who worked with so-and-so, who worked with so-and-so, who worked with me. Thank you. And I just I'm sorry. I did end up saying it. I've gone all weekend without saying it. It was powerful. It was a powerful, powerful moment. And I felt this sense of being. I felt this sense of purpose. I felt this sense of love and compassion and understanding, because I was the guy that would give you a hot shot and take your money, you know, so I could buy some booze. And I've done that. I didn't care about human life when I was on the street. I didn't care about nothing but me.
I think that in some ways, I think the real test of my program is its ability to be reproduced, right? Like what Sheldon was saying, you know, I see how when I work with someone, they're able to work with others, and those people work with others, and I think that's really a bigger testament to the quality of the program than how well I could speak at a meeting, because there's a lot of good talkers.
Well, pick up the ashtrays. What's your question?
Do you guys have what method or what questions that you guys use maybe to determine, you know, who wants to do this work and who doesn't? Because it seems like a lot of time is wasted on people who don't want to do this work.
How do we determine who wants to do this and who really won't? I don't think you really can, though. I think that I give them enough of an idea of how much work I'm going to put them through up front, because I use the Big Book Awakening to the people I work with, and I tell them that they're going to be responsible for getting all of those notes into their book and considering them before I get together. I'm going to I'm going to kind of get an idea of what their level of commitment is pretty quickly. I can't guarantee that they will follow it all the way through and work with others. I can't be attached to that either, right? I do know, though, that if they're not willing to do the things that I'd like them to do, because the notes that I ask them to put in the book is what's going to help them be, at some point, take other people through the process. So I know that if they're not willing to put those notes in the book up front, that they're not going to be able to work with others like I worked with them. Right, so there's already a problem, right? Depending on the person, I've worked with people that did continue to work with others. They don't do it necessarily how I'd like them to do it, right? But they attract people that they attract, and it's like I hope that they will continue to work the process and continue to work with others. I can't guarantee it, but I do know, as I said, if they're not willing to do the basic things that I can see in the beginning, there could be a problem. So
you gave them some information then about what's going to transpire.
Well, I show them.
Like notes,
I show them the Big Book Awakening, and I said, and I expect them to show up next week with a certain amount of notes in.
In working with others, it says we lent the person this volume and had them read the first portion. So what I have somebody do is I have them read the first portion of this book, the first 164 pages, some people 106 or whatever it is, but I let them know this is what we're going to do. So take a look at what we're going to do. Read the first portion of this book. Tell me what you think. Is this what you want to do? Maybe it's not. I've seen people poop out in inventory. I've seen people poop out in amends and drink. You know, you just can't be attached to all of that. Just be available.
You can talk about the things that should bring someone to desperation. Desperation hopefully will drive them to want to do this. Right? But the trouble is people confuse comfort with freedom. Right? By the time you get through the third step, you might be pretty comfortable, and the thought of writing inventory becomes really uncomfortable. Right? So I have no control over that. But
what's your question?
Well, my question was, say you're working with somebody and they drink halfway through the process. Say they're in the inventory and they drink. Do you start them back from the beginning, or do you keep working with them?
We'll discuss what had happened with them. See if they have a grasp of what we have gone over. Because when you have someone who's a continuous relapser, starting them at step one over and over again isn't necessarily productive. Because one through six are basically powerless steps. Right? It's one through six that I become willing to turn to God for help with. Right? I would at least take them to step seven, where we talk about how they're supposed to be willing at that point to turn to God for everything. And what that looks like for a persistent relapser is when the urge comes, I got to be ready to drop to my knees and beg God's help. Right? And if they're not willing to do that, then I have no control over that, right? I do not have the ability to keep anybody sober, and I certainly don't want to qualify for another program. So it's a touchy area there for me.
Hey, with the last four chapters, what do you guys do there with that after working with others?
I do stuff with that. I have a whole thing that I do with looking at the family afterwards and to the wives. Dan doesn't do anything with that, but it's up to, I think, an individual how you feel about those things and their importance. To the employer, it was important for me to see how I was a good employee and what an employer was expecting out of me. I saw a lot of relationship tips in to the wives and how to be in a relationship, not just with another, with a woman, but just with other people in general. And,
let me just, the tape's running out of time.
Yeah, we're out of
time. So I just want to say, we can stick around and talk about it some more, but I'm going to turn this off and just want to thank all of you guys for hanging with us. So I just want to, I'll get right back to you in one second. It's not that I don't do anything with them, it's because in efforts to turn the statements into questions in those other chapters, it looked more informational than, and it's something that maybe someone could read on their own. They didn't necessarily need my help with it. So I encourage them to read it on their own and consider how it